Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share your thoughts, perspective, and your views on a broad range of issues impacting your neighborhood, community, your city, our nation, and indeed our world. We have another great show for you this morning. We are in a strange time where the loyalty and commitment of the American worker is devalued, where the free market, Wall Street, and multinational corporations and corporate CEOs are given every advantage in our tax structure, political arena, and legislative process. The American worker, the poor, working class, and middle class families continue to face major challenges as incomes are stagnant and the political class argue over income disparity, raising the minimum wage, and extending unemployment for 1.3 million Americans. We're going to tackle all of these issues this morning here on Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland. Giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7. Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Joining me this morning via telephone from New Jersey is my friend and mentor, Myra Thomas. Myra Thomas is an award-winning finance, business, and tech reporter, having written for Thomson Reuters, Dice.com, eFinanceCareers.com, Strategic Finance Magazine, President and CEO Magazine, Knowledge at Wharton, and a host of other print and online finance and banking publications. She also served as regional and online content editor for NJBiz, New Jersey's business newspaper. Myra started her career in finance, eventually becoming AVP for a Lloyd's of London intermediary. Myra, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It's a pleasure to be with you as well.
Absolutely. Bridgegate. What's going on with Governor Christie?
Well, you know, I think the biggest issue in all of this is that, you know, people are wondering what this means for him on a national level as far as running for president next time around. So, you know, I'm hoping he's probably, and his people are probably hoping that they can smoke this whole thing by the time we start talking the election and, you know, election bids. So, but in the home state of New Jersey, I tell you, mayors are now coming out of the woodwork to talk a little bit about how they are rethinking whether or not their support of Bono or, you know, or not supporting Christie and staying neutral might have impacted funding that they've received in their areas.
Yeah.
So this is an ongoing story.
Yeah. Now, he's absolutely facing some strong headwinds here.
Yeah.
Is there going to be an impact on what happens with politics in New Jersey?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Christie didn't create the politics as they stand in New Jersey.
Yeah.
I think he perfected it. But the connections that happened between him being previous attorney general and then, you know, going into public service and then political appointees in various major roles within government, you know, this is a long-standing problem in the state.
Yeah.
And so I think that shining a light on these issues and having the clear light of sunshine on it is something that we really need to think about. So at least for the remainder of his term, I think, you know, he's going to be working hard to make sure he dots all his I's and crosses all his T's.
Now, nationally, 38% of Americans approve, 34% disapprove. It's obviously having some impact.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. He was the darling of the media for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that sort of behavior, that straightforward, straight-shooting kind of angry politician who gets something done might have appealed to, you know, sound bites, but it's not necessarily appealing when things go wrong.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. You know, I've driven across the George Washington Bridge dozens and dozens and dozens of time on my way to Harlem, and it's interesting. I know that folks had to be really upset on that day coming out of Fort Lee. I mean, really upset, and they're justifiably upset about that. Will this actually derail his opportunity to run for the White House?
It remains to be seen. We're so far from the election still, you know, and I think that some of the more conservative Tea Party folks that have spoken out against him show that they're looking to derail him themselves to get, you know, some sort of jump start on the election. So, you know, I think the real big turn in all of this might be, well, time, of course, in his favor. But the thing that might be against him is if we get enough Tea Party hopefuls who want to run for election sort of turning against him and trying to turn the tide. So once his own people start, you know, his Republican Party starts working against him, that might be the biggest problem that he might have to face.
So if it turns out that he was either aware or directed the lane closures, will it lead to an impeachment of Christie?
I think he's smarter than that. I think he probably created a tone and you know, a feeling in his staff that made them think that this was something that they could do.
Yeah.
But I think he's smarter than that.
But do you buy his claim that he didn't know the mayor of Fort Lee, given that there is a $1 billion redevelopment project taking place?
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah.
I find that really hard to believe. I mean, you're right. There is a major project that's sitting at the base of that bridge. And so, you know, anytime that happens in a state, that's a big, big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that he has no idea what's happening in Fort Lee, I find that really suspicious.
Right. Hey, just one more question regarding our friend Chris Christie. As a seasoned journalist, give your assessment of your colleagues. Are the reporters asking the tough questions?
Probably, definitely not. I mean, Christie availed himself of the press, I guess, right after the news broke. In a press conference that was painful, it lasted almost 2 hours, and the questions were pretty much the same sort of things over and over again. And I wish people had come into that whole, you know, press conference with a little bit more thought, because at the end of the day, it still seems a little ridiculous that the only motivation for this was to be punitive to a mayor that was basically not needed in an election.
Mm-hmm.
Bono was so far behind in the polls. Christie's people all knew that he was going to win. Why would they care about the endorsement of one Democratic mayor?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, there's other theories out there, but I think that they should have come into the press conference and asked, even after that, some more tough questions and did a little bit more investigative reporting to think about it.
Yeah. Now let's transition to a topic that is of importance to me, and that is how the poor is treated in this country. I read a very interesting op-ed in the New York Times by Paul Krugman,
mm-hmm.
and I just want to read an excerpt of that. He says, "The notion that unemployment is high because we're paying people not to work is a fallacy. No matter how desperate you make the unemployed, their desperation does nothing to create more jobs. Wrapped in a falsehood. Very few people are choosing to remain unemployed and keep collecting benefit checks. But our patchwork, uncoordinated system of anti-poverty programs does have the effect of penalizing efforts by lower-income households to improve their position. The more they earn, the fewer benefits they can collect. In effect, these households face very high marginal tax rates, a large fraction, in some cases, 80 cents or more of each additional dollar they earn is clawed back by government." Myra, it seems to me that the poor and working class families are getting short shrifted, particularly by Republicans. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And I think that, you know, there are many issues we need to talk about related to government benefits and the criminalizing of, you know, just receiving benefits that many Americans have already paid into.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Americans pay into unemployment. So the fact that they're taking it and made to feel shame about it is a sad statement, especially when, you know, there's less jobs being created. And, you know, if you look back at December, I think it was a very sluggish rate of job creation for December. I think it was only like 74,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, and a lot of those numbers, you know, as far as the drop in actual unemployment rate is related to the fact that so many people have just dropped off the rolls and hope of ever finding a job.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so these are issues we need to address, you know, and for the most part, I think a lot of the idea of criminalizing the unemployed or criminalizing people who receive government benefits is, you know, a ploy to take away from the issues of the big things that need to be resolved.
Yeah.
You know, the big things that need to be resolved is, you know, we need some serious government effort to try to improve the economy and try to improve the job situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we are trying to push much of the burden of our economy and much of the burden onto the working class and the lower middle class. And so it pays, and they're feeling the pinch, the working class and the middle class, and particularly the lower middle class, or people who are middle class and falling down, really are feeling the pinch, and they're suffering.
Right.
And so I think there's a real thought pattern behind this whole criminalization of the unemployed. They're playing the two ends against the middle, you know?
Yeah.
And so if you criminalize the people who are not working and say, hey, you people who are working, you know, you're working hard, you're not getting ahead, and that's because you have this tremendous amount of people who are sitting at the base of this economy, just sucking off the teeth of, you know, the American public, and you're suffering for it. Well, that's not the reason you're suffering, okay? We're trying to get away from the fact that wages have stagnated or dropped based on the costs that people now, you know, have to deal with. Americans didn't have to deal with health care costs. Employers paid for it in the past.
Right, you know? Right, yeah.
More of that has been shifted onto the employee, or if it's come directly out of pocket. More and more Americans are facing health care bills directly, even if they have health insurance or don't have health insurance. More and more Americans are watching that they don't have pensions. They don't have systems where a traditional pension plan where corporations paid into or gave a portion and kicked in a portion while you put in.
Right.
So, you know, those have all been converted to 401ks or whatever else, which means that, you know, more of the savings burden has been shifted to the worker. More and more people are not working, quote unquote, as traditional employees. They're working as part-time or contract work, you know, and piecing together a number of different jobs that on average are paying very little, you know, and less than ever.
Now,
so, so there are a number of motivations for trying to criminalize the unemployed.
Now, I've always said that the Republicans are the gatekeepers of the wealth divide in this country. The free market, in my judgment, is complicit in income inequality. And I always believe that if we're going to have a system like the free market system, it has to be fair to everyone.
Absolutely.
But it seems to me that it's not easy being poor in a free market capitalist society.
Yeah, the free market applies to the poor, but it doesn't apply to the rich. You know, we could trumpet this whole, you know, philosophy and idea about how wonderful the free market is if, you know, there are even benefits attributed to everyone across the board. But, you know, there's so many corporate kickbacks. You know, we've allowed corporations to dismantle many of the systems that have supported workers in the past.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, Walmart, I think, in Ohio, was running food drives for their own employees.
Yeah, yeah.
So that should
yeah.
tell you something about the wages that we're giving to Americans.
And how is it possible that our tax structure can be maneuvered in such a way and working at the behest of the wealthy in our country?
Well, that's the case. I mean, if you happen to be very wealthy and you've rigged the system, you know, or paid to lobby, you know, you get the benefits of watching your income through partnerships or investment income taxed at a lower rate than the average Joe Schmo who works at Donald's or, you know, goes off to a minimum wage job.
Mm-hmm.
He pays a higher percentage of his income in direct taxes. So there are many ways that people have gamed the system to benefit those who are making much more.
Right, right.
And our short-term gains, well, for a small portion of this country, has ended up being a long-term detriment for a lot of American workers. And so will those people ever get back on, ever be able to find long-term employment or find employment that puts them in a position to keep them financially secure is a big question that we have to ask going forward.
Yeah, because there seems to be a resignation on the part of the American people that our system is the way it is and there's no real motivation to change the status quo.
It seems that way. I'm hopeful that, you know, Americans look deep within themselves to understand what's happening. I mean, if you look back, I mean, obviously the dismantling of the unions has certainly played into a lot of the insecurities that Americans feel.
Right.
But when you talk about both ends being played against the middle, you'll see a shift, a mental shift in the way even Americans started to think about the teachers' union, you know, and how the teachers' union was actually pulling the rest of Americans down or giving too much to them. And look how we're hurting on the outside. But I think there's a shift that might be happening.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just hope that more people start to think this way. I mean, the majority of Americans now want the minimum wage to be raised. I think many more Americans realize that what was considered a starting wage, a training wage in the past, you know, a wage for teenagers or people just getting into the workforce, has now become the wage for the large majority of Americans over 26. So the way we look at the minimum wage has to change, and it has to be raised.
Yeah,
and so a number of states have passed, you know, graduated raising of the minimum wage in their states. So I think that's a hopeful sign.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest problem right now is that so many Americans are feeling the pinch who are working, you know, that there's just a lot of animosity that's built up. you know, in the American public. And I think that the lack of confidence in our politicians has made it even worse.
Yeah, because there was a feeling a few years ago that the American people finally began to see the light in terms of how workers were being treated, how the big banks were getting away with exploiting the consumers, the notion that too big to fail was harming our system. And for me, I thought that the Occupy movement was catching fire, but it seemed to dwindle out as the news coverage began to dwindle. So what was going on with that, and why is the passion gone?
I think the passion's gone because a lot of Americans are just caught up in their day-to-day, and that day-to-day is very difficult.
You know,
understanding complex, far-removed issues about how the deregulation of the banking system has hurt every American's pocketbook, has hurt, you know, jobs in this country, has hurt, you know, the housing market and the value of your home, are much hard. They're hard ideas to understand.
Yeah.
And they're hard things to digest, you know, but all of these things obviously do come around. And so I think that for most American workers, it's just the issue of the day-to-day. And so these are complex issues, and they're things that still need to be resolved. And they've been evolving over many, many years, going back to the original dismantling of regulations on the banks under Clinton. And so there is a bipartisan effort to deregulate the financial markets.
You say it's complex issues. I say that these folks have been beguiled into accepting that the laissez-faire and the free market is the gold standard upon which our democratic system should operate.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand that we really don't have a free market. You know, in many ways, because of corporate subsidies as well as tax incentives that we give to businesses to locate in areas. I mean, Walmart locates in an area, and for the most part, they get paid to be there.
Okay? Right.
Because, you know, local towns want them. But at the same time, they locate there, and then they act as a, you know, further drain on public welfare system, because employees who are working there still, because they make so little, end up getting, might qualify for Medicaid. They might qualify for all sorts of other benefits, the SNAP program or whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, we end up subsidizing very large corporations in many different ways.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, I think that we are far removed from this, but it's something that we need to talk about. And I agree with you. I thought that there was more of a momentum building with the Occupy movement. But I think that, you know, the media has done a really poor job of explaining the issues and keeping on this debate. And there's a constant fear of making an opinion known.
Right. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Okay.
While we are subsidizing American corporations, the American worker is required to increase work productivity, mm-hmm. and they are required to work longer hours. This seems to me not fair. It's not fair.
Yeah, it's not fair, and the only people that have benefited from it have been the corporations, shareholders, large shareholders, and the owners of these large corporations. I mean, for instance, if you look back to, you know, just many of the meatpacking and many of the large, you know, food companies like Tyson, what have you, you know, in the old days, many of the people that worked there were union employees, and they made, you know, a living wage. And now all of those jobs have, there's no more union jobs at any of these plants.
Yeah,
many
yeah.
of those companies have merged and created these large conglomerates, and so the wages have gone down. At the same time, profits of these corporations have gone up. So there's been a shifting of, you know, of profits from, you know, a fairer distribution to, you know, a small proportion of the populace. And, you know, I think this criminalizing of the unemployed just goes back to this whole thing. You know, people want to protect what they have.
Yeah. Now, Myra, conservatives argue that job creators, and you remember that term from the election, that they actually sustain our economy and are the backbone of the free market system. And, of course, we place a great emphasis on job creators. Do you agree with that argument?
You know, I think that what's been said by a lot of conservatives is this claptrap about how federal government is hurting the small business, and the small business is actually, you know, these are the companies that actually create the majority of work in this country.
Mm-hmm.
It's not plausible. You know, I think that, you know, once again, we're shifting the burden.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The recession has hit. There's tons of people out of work. Jobs are not being created.
Right.
Okay? And if you want to talk about the corporations, I mean, whose definition of small, right?
Right.
I think that whole argument is really talking about further subsidies for large corporations. Mm-hmm. I think that's a veiled argument that is actually in support of further giving aid to corporations that necessarily don't need it. You know, small business may be feeling the pinch, but at the end of the day, it's mid-sized businesses that really create the jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but that's not what most conservatives are arguing for. That's not the, you know, the industries that they're looking to protect.
Now, when we have an election in this country, particularly if it's a national election, we find that folks will vote against their own interests. And it seems indicative of not just in politics, but even in our social programs. And at some point, when are we going to get it that we are the ones who sustain our economy? There's not a product or a service in existence without a worker to fill those orders or cobble together the materials to bring those products to market. So when are we going to realize our own value?
I think part of the reason, that is a very good question. I think that right now, many people are starting to understand that. I think that we have to understand that, you know, consider the spending that we're doing is detrimental to ourselves.
Yeah.
We have to understand that the things that we do really impact how we live. And so Americans have to get energized again about voting.
Yeah.
Americans have to get energized again about being involved in local politics. Now, it's easier said than done. I think that when things are really bad, people are focused on the, you know, the day-to-day.
Yeah.
When things are really good, you know, people don't focus on these things as well. You know, the only thing I can hope is that, you know, once things, and they're slowly beginning to turn around as far as some people in this country, is that when people start to realize that the jobs are coming back slowly but surely, but they're different types of jobs that we're coming back to. I think things are slowly beginning to sink in, particularly for the middle class, you know, as they fall further down the rungs and realize the jobs that they're now moving into will never provide them this type of security that they had in the past.
Right, right.
And that's the people that you need to really get energized about voting and really get energized about trying to change the system.
But how do you do that without extricating the right-wing ideology that really mires them into their thinking?
Yeah, I think that we as the media are, you know, burdened with, you know, making these issues clearer and simpler for many Americans. I think that, you know, liberal media as well as conservative media have polarized the debate so badly.
That's true.
That, you know, we've really done a disservice to the American public. I mean, we think that they can't understand these issues. We focus on the extremes. We focus on stories that are not useful or not even relevant to the economy, you know, entertainment issues or whatever else, because it's easy. So I think that we have a real commitment to step up to the plate and explain issues to Americans in a much better way.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's hope that that happens.
Right. Well, we'll see. Now, as you know, you did mention the behemoth Walmart, and of course the fast food industry did take some blowback in recent months over low wages. The president has signaled his support for increasing the minimum wage, but of course Republicans are arguing that it will hurt business. It would be a detriment. Unravel that argument conservatives are making.
It does not stand up to economic reason.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, if you have more Americans working, hopefully, and you have them working at a higher rate, then they'll be pulling down less benefits, which I'm assuming that most conservatives say they want them to get off of anyway.
Right.
This idea that, you know, we've passed on the burden of to the employee and corporations have taken in more. I mean, for the most part, corporations have taken in more profits.
Right.
So this argument that, you know, raising the minimum wage is going to hurt, you know, job creation is just a fallacy.
Yeah, I think it was about $3 trillion in profits last year, something to that
yeah.
effect.
Yeah, and so, you know, this is just more of a protecting our own sort of behavior and mentality. And if people don't, you know, take apart the argument, they're going to be in real big trouble.
Yeah, yeah. Now, because you pay close attention to finances and issues relating to our economy, where do you see our economy going in 2014?
I think 2014 is going to be much of the same. I think that we're going to have sluggish growth. I think that the retail sector may see less of a growth as they've wanted. I think corporations are going to be disappointed, and many corporations are not going to meet analyst expectations. You know, I think the job market will continue to be sluggish because corporations are still worried. You know, I think that Americans are really suffering under the burden of – you know, low wages, and I don't think that there's any political momentum to change that anytime soon with a federal minimum wage.
Right.
So at least for the next couple of years, I think that it's going to be tough going for a lot of Americans. Now, I heard this morning that, you know, there's a possibility that, you know, there might be a plan to extend emergency unemployment benefits for a couple of months. But, you know, even extending that for a few months is not going to help the long-term unemployed.
Yeah,
you know? So, you know, there's about 4 million people who are still long-term unemployed.
Yeah.
You know? And that doesn't even include those who are working part-time, not by their own choice, of course, on contract, or who have simply stopped looking for employment because they can't find anything.
Right, right.
So, you know, the prospects for this coming year, much of the same.
While I have you, we have just 2 minutes left in the show. Apparently, the Affordable Care Act is facing another roadblock with respect to young folks signing up. What are your thoughts about what's going on there?
Yeah, the big problem has always been, you know, how do you attract young people to buy insurance? You know, and the biggest thing that stops them from buying insurance is that they don't have money in their pockets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the young people who are working have less money in their pockets than ever before. And so even a subsidized health insurance plan seems unaffordable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is one thing that, you know, is hard to work around.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it may take a longer term than people want to admit to get the whole system to even out and for it to pay for itself. And that's something that's going to cause a lot of political ill will for Obama.
Right. Now, I have no better person to explain the material that we used to read in sociology class. I think all of us who have gone through college knows about the proletariat versus the bourgeoisie. Explain that whole process for our listeners.
Oh, I don't think I want to get into that.
You know,
I think that's the that's the rebel in Ron coming out.
I can't help myself. For me, the poor and working class, we need to lose. I mean, literally lose our permanence. And you know, and I consider myself part of the working class. And those of us who work every single day, we don't have the luxury of driving around in a Bentley. Some of us have to take the bus to work. Some of us have to catch a cab to work. And I think we have been short-shifted in this country. I just believe that to my core.
Yeah, I think that if you look at the proletariat as the laborer in our country,
right.
that laborer has been removed from the equation for the large part by NAFTA and a number of other factors, you know, and manual laborers have been affected by shifts in population and immigration. And so, you know, what people used to earn as part of that proletariat has decreased. Their buying power has decreased.
Right.
Their expenses have increased. So, you know, there is a lot of animosity. And so, you know, we really have to work once again to think about how we view employment and how we view ourselves as Americans and the fairness that we used to think about. You know, I mean, it was Henry Ford who argued that, you know, he needed to pay people a fair wage so they could afford to buy his products. That's a very thoughtful and forward-thinking way
to think
of business, you know, and
yeah.
we've moved away from that. And also, us as working people, we've undermined ourselves as well because we you know, use Walmart. We use these stores that exploit us, exploit our family members, you know. So the question may be, of course, people say, I can't afford to go to a much more expensive store. We need to think about what we consume and how that plays into this whole paradigm.
Right, right, right. Well, Mara,
deeper issues.
that is true. That is true. Well, Mara, thank you so much for joining me this morning to talk about these very, very important issues. I certainly appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure, Ron.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. I want to again thank my friend and mentor, Myra Thomas, for coming on this morning by telephone from New Jersey. Myra's political and social insight, as well as her business acumen, is extremely valuable in these times. Her voice is sorely needed given the loud noise and skewed political agenda we're often hearing from a host of media outlets. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland2020
ronhollow25@yahoo.com. I also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollins.blogspot.com. This show is available on our Praise Charlotte website. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.